This part of the program is brought to you by St. Peter's Healthcare System, treating you better for life.
Welcome, listeners. You're listening to EBC Radio. This is 1170 AM. It's time once again for Heartbeat. Heartbeat is an educational program about your health, which airs on EBC Radio every second and fourth Saturday of the month. I'm Dr. Dinesh Singhal. I'm an interventional cardiologist. I'm the director of the Catheterization Laboratory at St. Peter's University Hospital with practices in Somerset, Monroe, and East Brunswick, and also an attending cardiologist at Robert Wood in Princeton. As always, I'm joined by my co-host, Dr. Meena Murthy. Dr. Murthy is the Chief of Endocrinology at St. Peter's University Hospital, and together we bring this show to you every second and fourth Saturday of the month.
Good afternoon, and a special hello to all the women on behalf of the International Women's Day yesterday.
Yeah, congratulations to all the women out there. So today we have a very interesting topic. We had touched on this once before a few years ago, but this is such an upcoming subject that really pays to revisit it and get another perspective on the topic. And the topic today we're going to be discussing is immuno-oncology. Now, oncology, as most of you know, is the field of medicine which deals with the diagnosis and treatment of cancer. Immunology is a field which deals with our immune system, our body's ability to fight a variety of infections and ways for the body to deal with any foreign body within the system. And today we're joined by Dr. Philip Reed. He is an oncologist and a member of the Regional Cancer Care Associates. He will help us understand how these two fields are coming together, the field of cancer and the field of immunology. You know, cancer is a problem none of us ever want to have to deal with, but the realities of life are such that if a diagnosis is made, we have to address it and deal with it. And we always hope that there are treatments available to us which allow us to have a cure to this disorder. And this is one of the fields in medicine which are rapidly progressing. And we'll have Dr. Reed help us understand that. So, Philip, thank you so much for coming.
My pleasure.
Most of us understand what oncology is, and as physicians, we have a reasonable understanding of the immunology field. But our listeners who may understand, at least have some understanding of cancer, may not fully understand immunology or the immune system. So let's just help them understand what the immune system is, so, and then we'll kind of tie the two together and see how these two are connected. So what is the immune system in the body? What does it do? How does it work?
Sure. So the immune system is a tied together set of organs, cells, and processes by which the body tries to maintain itself. It is designed to prevent invasion of the body by other organisms, and it does so by continuously surveilling yourself. So there are cells that float within the bloodstream, white blood cells, and they travel throughout the blood and all the tissues of the body, and they're on the lookout for anything that should not be there. Now, the types of infective organisms is quite broad. It includes bacteria and viruses and fungi and many other organisms that could potentially affect the body. And the immune system, when it recognizes something that's foreign, can mount a defense. And the defense includes what we call cytotoxic cells, cells that can destroy other organisms. It includes creation of antibodies that can that are proteins, molecules that float in your bloodstream and they can stick to infectious organisms and help target the immune system to them. And the whole system tries to maintain self. But one of the most important things the immune system does is it has to control itself and gauge what is self and what is non-self. When you think about it, your cells and an invading organism doesn't have a sign that says, I should be here and I should not be here. And the immune system looks at proteins in the cells and in the body and decides whether or not they should be there based on a series of checkpoints that control the activity of the immune system.
So it's an extremely smart system which allows us to both prevent infections, as you said, as well as the growth of certain kind of cells. So are there, is there a mechanism which prevents, you know, in cancer there is this extra cell growth which is causing tumors to occur. So are there instances where the immune system is protecting us even from the beginnings of cancer at times without us even knowing it?
Yes, certainly. So there are several observations that have been made, and some of them are quite old, that suggest that the immune system can help control and is controlling cancer all the time. In the turn of the century, it was observed that some individuals who had very actively growing cancer, sarcomas, when they became infected and ill with a bacteria called Streptococcus, in the midst of fighting that very active infection, developing fevers up to 103, 105, their tumors actually shrank. And this was noted by the physicians at the time, and they began to put the two together to say that the attempt to fight off this infection also ultimately controlled the cancer. Now, it was a rare observation, and it was very difficult to reproduce, and there were certainly experiments at the time to try to do so. But it did leave that lingering knowledge in the medical literature that perhaps the immune system can control cancer. There are other observations as well. For instance, individuals who have undergone an organ transplant are placed on medications to suppress the immune system so that the immune system does not reject the transplant. Those individuals who have transplants are known to have a higher likelihood of developing certain types of cancer, such as skin cancers. And the implication there is that when you turn down the immune system, part of that surveillance of new cancer development is lost, and you see a higher incidence of developing new cancers.
So I'm just going to, again, just to help our listeners, so when there is some form of a trigger and the body most of the times knows that this is a trigger which we don't need, and sometimes it doesn't realize, but when there is a foreign trigger of some kind, there is this whole complex system in the body which gets stimulated and almost like an army just comes in to try and fight something. And in certain instances, we don't want it triggered, like the transplant where it's a foreign substance now or a foreign tissue in the body. And we don't want it to come and fight because it's for a good reason. Mm-hmm. And there we give drugs and medicines to suppress that immune system. And there are times when it actually comes in and is helpful, like the sarcoma example you gave.
Mm-hmm. So the way this works on a cell level is the immune system has a type of cell, a white blood cell called a T cell, and it has a receptor protein on the surface of it, and that protein touches other parts of the immune system, something called the dendritic cell. The dendritic cell takes old cells or cells or that are close to it, sort of chews it up, and then takes all of the contents of the cell, breaks it up into very small peptides, small bits of protein, and places it on its surface. The T cell comes along and touches the dendritic cell, and if the T cell recognizes, and now they use that broadly because it's on a cell level, recognizes the protein as something that should be in the body, the T cell is not activated. If the T cell does not recognize the protein or bits of cells that something that should be in the body, the T cell is activated, and it begins to release chemicals that brings in other components of the immune system, and the whole process of generating an attack is initiated. What cancer cells can do is they can turn off that recognition of themselves as being foreign. It happens both naturally because they are cancer cells are formed from their own body cells. You know, what differentiates them from a normal cell is that they can invade, they can move to other places, and also they're immortal. Most body cells have a certain number of times they will divide and then they stop. Cancer cells don't have that control anymore, and they can reproduce themselves indefinitely and move. To develop those characteristics, they must change from the way that normal cells control themselves, and that change produces unusual proteins and unusual substances that the immune system can detect. But the cancer cells also have many ways of turning off the immune system, and it's the recent advances in immuno-oncology have been improvements in the way that we can stop the cancer cells from hiding essentially from the immune system. And these are called checkpoints. The reason that these checkpoints are there is to prevent the immune system from incorrectly attacking the body. There are a whole range of illnesses that result from this, and many of the listeners are aware of things like rheumatoid arthritis or lupus. These are all diseases, or even diabetes and hypothyroidism are illnesses where the immune system has made a mistake, essentially, and is inappropriately attacking parts of the body. That mistake occurs when these checkpoints fail. So there's a natural process by which the immune system ignores what's good or what should be in the body and attacks what is not. And if you turn off that system as a cancer cell, you can evade the immune system. So part of it is that the immune system doesn't always see cancer as something that should not be there, and as a consequence, it allows it to grow.
The question to many people is, we have cancer potential cells, either genetically or otherwise, you know, that we acquired. What makes that cancer cell take off and become so powerful? What are those factors, right? That's the mystery.
Yes, well, the reality, though, is there are many different ways that cancers form. There are, for instance, instances where lung cancer can form from a single mutation, something called the epidermal growth factor receptor. One mutation can do it. Whereas most lung cancers form from years of injury to the DNA of cells that comes from the tar and carcinogens in tobacco smoke. And just out of bad luck, over time, enough changes in the DNA of a cell is made so that it loses its own regulation. It loses its ability to stop growing when it should, and it acquires the ability to invade and move to other locations. And, you know, the number of genes that are involved in carcinogenesis or the formation of cancer is quite large. And it's two cancers can have very different pathways of doing it. And some cancers are very simple pathway. For instance, there's an illness called CML that develops essentially from a change in chromosome 9 and 22, something called the Philadelphia chromosome. And if you have that change, you can develop CML. If you block that one gene from acting, you can actually cure, put it into long-term remission just with a pill. Unfortunately, most cancers are not that simple, and the ones that have formed after developing multiple mutations are very difficult to control once it has happened.
You're listening to Heartbeat. This is EBC Radio, 1170 AM. I'm Dr. Dinesh Singhal. We're talking to Dr. Philip Reed. He's an oncologist with the Regional Cancer Care Associates. Our topic today is immuno-oncology. The phone number in the studio is 732-297-9886. So we kind of have a basic understanding of the immune system. We talked about cancer, and now we're going to try and see what role does immune therapy have. Mm-hmm. But before we do that, let's see, we have a caller. Hi, you're on the air on Heartbeat.
Hi, excellent information. This is really great. But my only request is I can't digest it just in one go. If this can be put on some website which we can read and, you know, over a period of time digest the information, it'll be a great help.
Right. So actually a few years ago, we did accomplish this. So if you go to heartbeatradioshow.com, you will find some of our old shows, and hopefully within a week we'll have this particular show on the website also.
Excellent. Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. So now we have cancer, which is a miscreant. It's not something we want. And on the other hand, we have a system which in most cases works well. Sometimes it'll go haywire, and that's our immune system. In some cases, as you said, it will kind of take care of things on its own. But what we are trying to understand today is how that has been capitalized in addressing some of the cancers out there. But before we get into that, what are the traditional forms of treatment which are available or which were available before even immunotherapy came into play for management of cancers?
Sure. So there's several, actually multiple therapies for cancer. Ideal one is simply remove it surgically, remove it all from the body. There is the use of chemotherapy of one form or another. Now, you know, many people think of chemotherapy as something you receive intravenously, but certainly there is chemotherapy that's taken as a pill, that's given IV in the office. There's also chemotherapy that's given slowly as a drip over time, or even placed on the skin. So there are multiple different chemotherapy agents. A big description of what they do, at least traditional chemotherapy, and this is becoming more complicated as we get better at targeting cancer cells, is they destroy cells preferentially that are growing quickly. As a general rule, cancer cells grow faster than most of the normal body cells. And when a cell divides, it becomes very vulnerable to attack, because there are multiple processes by which it has to reproduce its DNA and then make a clone of itself, and the DNA is the instruction that's inside the cell, and then place that DNA into both of the daughter cells, because one split cell divides into two. That whole process requires energy. It requires multiple chemical steps, and it is prone to make mistakes. And the faster you're dividing, the more mistakes you make. And so chemotherapy preferentially kills cells that are doing that division very quickly. But it's relatively crude. It also affects normal cells. Now, everything isn't on the side of the cancer cell. While the cancer cell is essentially immortal, it actually is metabolically not as strong as a normal body cell. So what happens is the normal body cell and the cancer cell are exposed to the chemotherapy. The normal body cell can deal with the stress of the chemotherapy. The cancer cell cannot. Therefore, the cancer dies and the body continues. It's an imperfect attack, but it does work and is quite effective in many circumstances. So that's chemotherapy. Then there's also radiation therapy. Radiation therapy very much replicates what chemotherapy does, but using radiation. It attacks cells that are dividing and or destroys the DNA inside cells so they can't divide. Again, cancer cells are more sensitive to it than the body's regular cells, and therefore we can treat cancer and cure it and survive the therapy. So surgery, chemotherapy, radiation, sort of the big standbys.
How did this immune therapy idea develop, come up, and yep, how it has evolved?
Sure. So, as I said, there is this observation over now centuries that the immune system appears to be able to control certain cancers. What really happened is we've begun to understand the immune system much better. You know, in the past, the idea was you try to replicate the high fever and the chills and the shaking, and maybe that was doing something. But really what the chills and the high temperature of an illness, those are byproducts of the immune system releasing chemicals into your body to help fight infection. So really what's happened is we now understand better the immune system, and particularly these control points of the immune system, these checkpoints, where the immune system makes a decision whether or not to activate itself and essentially attack, or to understand that the cell it's looking at is actually part of the body and should be left alone. Immunotherapy, and there's several different types of it, but the class that is sort of generating the most interest and buzz now specifically attacks these checkpoints. So they're called checkpoint inhibitors. And the treatment medications themselves are proteins that block these checkpoints. Once that happens, the immune system, in a sense, can now see the cancer as being slightly different from a normal cell and therefore attack it.
Hi, you're on the so let's just take this caller. Hi, you're on the air in Heartbeat.
Yeah, hi. I have some question. If person have a cancer and if they have a chemotherapy, after the chemotherapy, the feet it got a numbness and doctor say that is permanent damage. Is any other medications?
So let me just make sure I understand. So there was cancer, chemotherapy was given, and that led to numbness in the feet?
Cancer and uterus, and then giving me chemotherapy. And the problem, after everything, 3 years, my half feet are numbness. And they say this is permanent. Is your feet, there is no any other medication.
So I guess the question is, can chemotherapy lead to numbness of the feet? Are there two
conditions? Yeah.
Yes. After the, so they say we cannot, there is no, we give you a lot of kind of the medicine, it's not helping you. So there is no any other medicine and you have to leave it like that.
Sure. Sure. Unfortunately, what you're describing is neuropathy, which is injury to nerves that occurs when they're exposed to certain chemotherapy drugs. Many times the neuropathy does recover, but unfortunately it can be permanent in certain circumstances. Very similar to neuropathy that individuals with diabetes develop. Some cases, once the nerve damage has occurred, it is... It can be reversible in some circumstances. There are medications to treat neuropathy, but most of those medications really are addressed at the symptom. It doesn't fix the underlying problem. And unfortunately, as I said, that although the body's cells are stronger and can survive the chemotherapy, they can be permanently injured sometimes.
Right.
Okay. Well, thank you for your call. Hope you feel better. Thank you. Well, folks, you're listening to Heartbeat. This is EBC Radio. Thank you for listening and calling in with your questions. The first half of the program is almost over. We'll be going to a commercial break, so make sure you come back and listen to the other half of the program. We're joined today in the studio by Dr. Philip Reed, who is an oncologist. The topic today is immuno-oncology. I'm Dr. Dinesh Singhal with Dr. Meena Murthy, and we'll be back right after this commercial break.
EBC Radio would like to thank St. Peter's Healthcare System, treating you better for life, for sponsoring the preceding program of Heartbeat Show.
We know finding a good doctor, someone you can trust, is not easy. But now you can find St. Peter's Physician Associates, a network of primary care doctors and specialists, at Fairways Town Center on Stelton Road in Piscataway, offering evening, weekend, and walk-in hours. To book an appointment online, visit sppanj.com or call 732-339-7575. 732-339-7575.
This is EBC Radio. You're listening to 1170 AM. The program is Heartbeat. We're also live on the web, www.ebcmusic.com. I'm Dr. Dinesh Singhal. I'm a cardiologist, joined by my co-host, Dr. Meena Murthy. We're talking to Dr. Philip Reed. He is an oncologist with the Regional Cancer Care Associates. And our topic today is immuno-oncology and immunotherapy in cancer. The phone number in the studio, if you have any questions, you want to join us, comment 732-297-9886, 732-297-9886. Just a quick recap, if you're joining now, we talked a little bit about cancer and the immune system, which is kind of a protective system to help the body fight infections and small cells which don't belong. And we're discussing now as to how this form of treatment, where the body's immune system is being used to fight cancers on top of the existing therapies of surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation, which were the standard therapy in the past. One question for Dr. Reed is, since when has this form of treatment been kind of in vogue?
It's been a goal of many oncologists to be able to treat cancer with the immune system for decades now. It's just that the previous attempts have been very crude, and there were responses, but the responses were never as good as we would like. And in addition, the symptoms from the therapies were more than we would like as well. For instance, melanoma type of skin cancer is treated with a medication called interleukin. And interleukin is one of the chemicals that the immune system produces when fighting an infection. And we could see occasionally very nice responses when, you know, a very large bulk of disease would melt away. But the downside here is that interleukin also reproduced all the symptoms of the flu. So you would get therapy and you would get high fevers, achiness, and the malaise and fatigue and ill feeling you'd get from the flu. And, you know, many patients said it's actually worse than the disease itself. So those were the cruder attempts that were being used. Now, the checkpoint inhibitors, in contrast, they're protein drugs. You know, you order them, sit on the shelf, you come into the office and you receive them intravenously. And what they're doing here, as we'd mentioned, they're turning off the control systems of the immune system so the immune system can now see the cancer. Now, when you receive one of these medications, you may occasionally have a slight temperature during the infusion, but actually that's relatively rare. No nausea. It doesn't decrease your blood cell counts. You don't get hair loss. So many of the standard side effects of chemotherapy are not present. Once you receive the medication, the checkpoint inhibitor blocks the interactions that turn off the immune system. The immune system can now see the cancer and ideally can begin to mount a defense against it. Now, what does that get you? If you think about it, the immune system, it's dynamic. It's made of living cells, and they're always active. It doesn't sleep. You know, traditional chemotherapy, you receive it, your body metabolizes it, and within, 24 or 48 hours, often it's out of your body completely. That doesn't happen with the immune system. It's always active, even when you're sleeping, trying to control the disease. So you, in the ideal situation, now have what we would like is that our body is behaving as it should, which is preventing the cancer cells from propagating, causing them to shrink. So that many of the side effects that you can anticipate with regular chemotherapy are not there with immunotherapy. And, you know, the oldest patient I have on immunotherapy is 91 and has been on therapy for a year and a half. You would never look at this person and think that they have a cancer. And that's a stage 4 melanoma, and that they're receiving therapy which has controlled their disease and taken away their symptoms. You know, unfortunately with life, there's no such thing as a free lunch, though. So there are potential downsides from this strategy. The checkpoints are there for a reason. They prevent the immune system from going haywire and causing problems such as attacking the own body organs. Now, as I had mentioned, there are a whole class of diseases called autoimmune diseases where the immune system is inappropriately adversely affecting your organs. Some of them that you know of, diabetes is one, hypothyroidism. You can get a pneumonitis, which is inflammation of the lungs. Many of these illnesses that exist outside of the use of immunotherapy can be replicated by the use of immunotherapy. So whereas you don't get hair loss and nausea and vomiting and so forth, you can get unusual things such as developing what's essentially diabetes. You can develop a decrease in your thyroid gland function, hypothyroidism, where you would experience fatigue and sometimes even lower leg swelling from that. You can develop an equivalent of inflammatory bowel disease where you'd have increased frequency of going to the bathroom or some abdominal cramping. Now, all of these things are experienced and have been recorded in patients on immunotherapy. However, in aggregate, most people only have one or the other of these potential downsides. And very frequently, they're controllable with steroids that might suppress the immune system a little bit or holding the therapy. So in aggregate, patients receiving immunotherapy experience less in the way of side effects as compared to conventional chemotherapy. But I don't want to mislead to say that they have no side effects. It, certainly, there are many issues that can occur and require surveillance from the doctors and the treating staff.
As far as, in whom you would use immunotherapy, are there some genetics or other kinds of markers or indicators that tell you ahead of time who will respond to the immunotherapy?
Sure. So, good question. Now, you know, this being America and commerce being prime, pharmaceutical companies are actively trying immunotherapy, I would say, on almost every cancer. So the ones that we can choose to prescribe and use are the ones that have been proven to be effective in that particular malignancy, in that particular cancer. So based on the type of cancer that you have, there are certain checkpoint inhibitors that have been shown to be effective, and you'd be a candidate for one or the other of those drugs. For instance, in lung cancer, there are several checkpoint inhibitors that are effective. We can narrow down which one to use and in whom to use it by looking at certain features of the cancers. For instance, there is a protein called PD-L1, and you have to know the name, but it's on certain lung cancer cells. If enough of the PD-L1 is detected in the lung cancer specimen, it suggests you have a high likelihood of responding to a medication called pembrolizumab, which is a checkpoint inhibitor. And if that percentage of cells is above 50%, it has the PD-L1 protein, you can actually receive the immunotherapy alone. If the percentage of the PD-L protein is lower than that, the recommendation would be to receive the immune therapy plus chemotherapy. And that sort of process to distinguish which medication to use in which malignancy can happen across many different types of cancers.
So I just want to get this right. So, and we'll take this as an example. So that protein, the PD-L protein, what is it doing
in the cancer. It's actually a very interesting topic because the PD-L1 protein is normally on the body's cells, and its purpose is to control the immune system. It's to prevent. So in normal body cells, if the T cell, a white blood cell that's part of the immune system, comes along and touches a normal cell,